across his chest and back. He drew the curtains against the sunlight, dizzy with fatigue. There was only one bed, so he sank to the floor beneath the window, his back against the hotel's faded wallpaper. Kate said nothing but dropped a pillow over the side of the bed. August stretched out on the dingy carpet, tucking the pillow behind his head. It was so quiet. The motel was a nest of muffled noises, dripping water and far-off voices and the electric hum of appliances, and beyond, the growl of engines and tap of shoes on concrete. He missed his music player, missed the hundreds of more familiar sounds that came with living in the compound, every one of them helping to drown the gunshots that now rose to fill the silence in his head. And then, mercifully, music. He looked up to see Kate fiddling with the radio beside the bed. "Hey, quiet," she mumbled, turning past a classical station to something with a low, heavy beat. She found his eyes in the curtain dark and flashed him a tired, almost smile back before sinking gingerly back to the bed. Within minutes, her breathing had evened and he knew she was asleep. August let himself sink into the songs, drift past the words and into the instruments, picking apart the threads of sound as he tried to sleep. He couldn't remember ever being so tired. The ceiling swam in his vision, and a shiver passed through him like the cusp of a cold. And then, just as he was drifting off, the hunger started. Chapter 7 August woke from fever dreams to cool air and the smell of mint. His skin ached and his bones were humming, and a shape hovered over him, a nest of hair blocking out the last light beyond the window. His dreams had been a tangled mess of teeth and shadows, and for a second he thought he was still asleep, still dreaming. But then he felt the cheap motel carpet beneath his back, and the shape leaned closer, revealing blue eyes and strawberry curls and skin covered in stars. "Ilsa?" he asked. Throat dry. But Ilsa couldn't be here. His sister didn't leave the compound. He tried to blink away the phantom, but she only grew more solid. "Shh, little brother." She pressed her fingers against his mouth and turned his face toward the bed. "Someone is sleeping." Kate was curled up on her side with her back to them, a blanket slipping to reveal the bandages wrapped around her waist. And it hit him in a wave, where he was, what had happened. Colton, the Malachi, the tunnels, the hunger. August sat up and the room tipped. "You can't be here."
"Can't, shouldn't, wouldn't, won't," she whispered. "No one saw me go. No one thinks to look for someone who's always there. They are all looking for you."
"How did you find us?"
"You tick, I talk," she said, her voice so soft that only his ears could pick it up. "I would hear you anywhere."
A breeze blew through the window. It was open, twilight streaming in. He'd slept all afternoon, and he winced as his pulse thudded in his skull, and Ilsa pressed her cool palm to his cheek.
"You're warm."
He brushed her hand away. "I'm all right," he mouthed, because it was still true. "Is anyone with you?" She shook her head. Her eyes were wide, the skin tight over her bones, her edges haloed by the thin light from the window. She looked wrong outside the compound, as if she'd left some part of herself behind.
"Our sister has two sides. They do not meet."
"Ilsa," he whispered. "You can't be here."
"Henry is worried. Leo is angry. Emily wanted me to come. She didn't say the words, but I heard them anyway."
"You need to go back home. If Harker's men see you, if they catch you..."
"I told you everything was breaking."
Ilsa sank down next to him, curled up right there on the floor with her cheek to the carpet, picking at the fibers.
"I could feel it," she murmured. "And I'm glad it's not inside me, but that means it's out here. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I let the cracks into the world.
He rolled toward her.
Hush, Ilsa. It wasn't you.
I told Leo about the cracks, and he told me everything breaks. But I wish it didn't have to. I wish we could go back instead of forward.
I wish we could stay the same,
whispered August. She gave him a rueful smile.
Nobody gets to stay the same, little brother.
She nodded at Kate.
Not even them.
She took his hand and folded it in hers, the way she had with the traitors back at the compound, just before she took his soul.
Please come home.
I can't, Ilsa. Not yet.
His eyes went to the bed.
Do you care about her?
The question was simple, curious.
I care about us, about our city. Someone tried to kill her, to frame us, to break the truce.
A shadow swept across Ilsa's face.
I don't want to burn again.
She's an innocent, he added. I'm just trying to keep her safe.
Ilsa's features smoothed.
All right, she said. Then I'll help.
August shook his head.
No, please go home, Ilsa. I need you safe, he thought. There is too much to lose. I can't risk you.
A small crease formed between her eyes.
But someone has to keep the shadows back.
August tensed.
What shadows?
The ones with teeth.
He sat up.
Malachi?
Ilsa nodded.
They are coming. They are on their way.
How do you know?
I can feel the cracks they make and...
He took her by the shoulders.
But how do you know?
The man downstairs. He told me.
She went on, as if she hadn't heard him.
It spilled right out of his mouth, little brother. He couldn't keep it in. He went back and forth, but then he broke, like all things do.
August let go, pushed his hands through his hair.
Kate, he said. Kate, wake up.
She made a muffled sound but didn't stir. Ilsa slid to her feet and crossed to the bed.
No, Ilsa, wait.
But it was too late. She was already reaching out, wrapping her fingers around Kate's shoulder. She must have squeezed it because Kate gasped and jerked forward, the lighter in her hand transforming into the small, sharp knife. The silver edge pressed to Ilsa's throat. His sister looked down at the girl, but didn't move.
You are hurt,
said Ilsa simply.
Who are you?
Demanded Kate.
We have to go,
said August, pulling on his shirt. But Kate was still staring at Ilsa as if entranced, which made sense. Ilsa was entrancing.
This is my sister Ilsa. Ilsa, Kate.
Kate's eyes went to the stars pouring down Ilsa's bare arms.
You're the third one.
Ilsa cocked her head.
No,
she said sweetly.
I'm the first.
Kate lowered the knife, her free hand against her injured stomach. August could see the pain etched into her features.
What's going on? Malachi, coming. Now.
Kate pitched to her feet, swaying before Ilsa caught her. Kate stared down at the place where the Sunai's fingers met her skin.
Listen for me, Ilsa.
August pulled on his shoes, slung the violin over his shoulder. His sister pressed her ear to the wall.
Tell me if they...
They're here.
August paled, caught the distant sound of steps, the wet rattle of voices, the scent of rot. She was right. Kate swore, maneuvering her shirt back on. She headed for the door, and August took a step, but turned back when his sister didn't follow.
Come on!
Go, little brother,
she said, her ears still to the wall.
I will stay here until you are gone.
It isn't safe,
he said, holding out his hand. But Ilsa reached up and touched his cheek instead.
Safe,
she said with a hollow smile.
That is a pretty word.
Come on, snapped Kate beside the door. But...
Don't worry, August. I'm not afraid of the dark.
Our sister has two sides.
He took Ilsa's face in his hands.
Please be careful. They do not meet.
Go,
she said.
before the cracks catch up.
Chapter 8 Kate had an iron spike out by the time they reached the hall. The lighter's hidden knife was well and good for threatening schoolgirls, but it wasn't long enough to bypass the ribs of a Maokai and hit the heart. She hadn't had a chance to clean the spike since the attack at Colton, and the edge was still crusted with blackish blood. August was there at her side, one hand up as if he thought she would fall, as if he planned to catch her. There was an elevator and two stairwells, one on either end of the hall. A 1 in 3 chance of choosing wrong, but she wasn't about to get caught in a box. Pain burned across her stomach as she raced for the nearest set of stairs. August kept looking back toward the room and the other Sunai, with her sad eyes and her skin covered in stars. "She'll be fine," said Kate as they plunged into the stairwell, and it came out sounding hollow even though the girl wasn't just a girl, of course. She was a monster. She'd made the Baron, torn a hole in the world. Surely she could face a few Maokai if it came to it. They hit the second floor, landing right as a door slammed open below, and the air went cold. August must have felt the difference, too, because he grabbed her hand and they burst out onto the second floor, sprinting for the other set of stairs. Down, down, steps echoing through the concrete chamber as they passed the first floor and kept going. A door thrown open overhead. They hit the basement level just as a shape dropped like a stone over the stairs and landed before them in an elegant crouch. The fall should have shattered the creature's body, but the Maokai rose fluidly, red eyes a little more than violent cuts in her skull. A gash ran down her cheek, obscuring the H once branded into her skin.
"Foolish little Harker," she said, her mouth twisting into a rictus grin. "Doesn't know when to die."
The Maokai's red eyes cut to August, and she let out a wet hiss.
"Sunai."
August started to put himself in front of Kate, but someone was stomping down the stairs. He appeared, a human rippling with muscles, a metal baton clutched in one meaty hand. Just like the Maokai, the man's face bore her father's brand, and just like the Maokai, it had been clawed off. Angry red welts ran down his cheek. The sight of him made Kate's head spin. A human? The dissenters were gathering steam. And men. But that made no sense. Olivier's whole point had been... The man's baton slashed toward her, and August pulled her out of the way and got his arm up in time to block the blow. When the metal cracked against his forearm, electricity arced and crackled over his skin. August gasped, but didn't buckle. Kate felt a shudder of movement at her back and spun, slashing at the Maokai with the iron spike. But the creature ducked and dodged, her motions terrifyingly fast and impossibly fluid. Beside Kate, August's fist connected with the man's face, and his head cracked sideways, but he didn't fall. He struck again with the baton, and this time August caught it in one hand, the energy arcing over him and filling the stairwell with static. For an instant, his gray eyes burned blue with the power, and then he tore the weapon from the man's grip. Kate stepped too close to the Maokai, trying to get under her guard, but the monster's skeletal fingers caught her by the jaw and shoved her back into the wall. Light burst across her vision from the force of the blow, and the Maokai's mouth yawned into a smile. Kate smiled too, then drove the metal spike down into the Maokai's sinewy forearm. The monster hissed and slammed Kate back again, but this time Kate hit the door instead of the wall and went stumbling backward into the basement garage, landing hard on the concrete. Pain seared through her injured shoulder and across her stomach, and she could feel fresh blood welling against the bandages as the Maokai appeared, pulling the spike free and casting it aside. Another crash, and August and the man came tumbling into the garage, a tangle of limbs. The baton went skidding away, and Kate was halfway to her feet when the Maokai sent her sprawling backward to the concrete with a vicious kick. She felt stitches tear and stifled a cry, eyes blurring. Before she could force herself up, the monster was on her, slight but dense, unyielding.
Kate strained to reach her back.
Oh, dear,
said the Maokai, pinning her to the cold ground, her razor teeth shining in the artificial light.
It seems you've lost your toy.
Kate's fingers closed over the metal against her spine. That's why I keep two, she said, driving the second spike up into the Maokai's chest. The monster gasped as Kate forced the spike home, greasy black blood spilling over her fingers as the Maokai collapsed onto her, more bones than body. She freed herself from the dead weight, recovered the two spikes, and staggered to her feet in time to see August force the baton up below the human's chin. There was an electric crackle, a spasm of blue, and the man went down with all the grace of a cinder block. August looked shaken, eyes wide and strangely bright, but he was already moving again. He plunged back into the stairwell and reemerged a moment later, clutching his violin case. Kate didn't waste time. She turned and started moving briskly, deliberately, between the rows of vehicles.
"What are you looking for?" he asked.
A car alarm was going off in the distance, and he cringed as if the sound were deafening. "A ride," she answered. Some of the cars were too new, others too old. She finally stopped in front of a black sedan, nice enough, but not one of the models with fancy security and keyless entry. "Break that for me," she said, nodding at the driver's side door.
"The window?"
asked August, and she gave him a look that said, "Yes, obviously the window." And he gave her a look that said,
"I don't commit petty crimes very often,"
before he slammed his elbow into the glass to shatter it. The sound wasn't loud, but it echoed through the garage as Kate reached in and unlocked the doors. She brushed the pebbles of broken glass from the seat and slid in as gingerly as possible, using the lighter's hidden knife to pry open the panel beside the steering wheel. August rounded the car and sank into the passenger seat, the violin case between his knees, as she sliced wires and began stripping them.
"Is this something they teach at boarding school?"
he asked, craning to watch the garage behind them.
"Oh, yeah,"
she said, crossing two wires together. Nothing. "This, breaking and entering, monster killing, it's all standard." She stripped another pair and tried again. There was a spark, and the car's engine thrummed to life.
"Impressive,"
said August dryly. She lifted both hands to the wheel, then winced as the pain caught up.
"I don't suppose you know how to drive."
August shook his head.
"No. I can probably figure it out."
"That's okay," she said, shifting into drive. "We already have plenty of ways to die." She put her foot on the gas, and the car shot forward with surprising power, letting out a squeal that made August groan. It wasn't that loud, she thought. Maybe Sunai had sensitive hearing. She gripped the wheel. Growing up, she'd always liked cars. The fresh air racing past. The feeling of freedom, of motion. She wasn't that fond of them since the accident, but driving was a handy skill, like physics in combat. She rounded the corner of the parking structure and hit the brakes. There was a gate over the exit, a man in the booth. She reached for the seatbelt, then remembered the stitches and decided to leave it. "Hold on," she said, gunning the gas. The car surged forward. August gripped the door.
"Kate, I don't think this is a..."
But the rest of his words were cut off by the satisfying crack of the front bumper connecting with the garage gate, the former denting and the latter snapping off as they burst through and onto the darkened street. The car swerved for an instant before righting itself, and Kate smiled as she revved the engine, drowning the attendant shouts in their wake. August twisted in his seat and looked back at the wreckage and the motel, and she wondered if he was thinking about Ilsa. She shifted lanes, following the traffic lights as they changed from red to green so that no matter what, they were always moving. "Is anyone coming?" August slumped back against the seat with a ragged sigh.
"Not yet."
His eyes were closed, his muscles tense, fingers white on the handle of the door as if he might be sick.
"You okay?"
"I'm fine." She didn't believe him, but his tone was clipped in that way that said to let it go. She had more important things to worry about right now than his mood, so she headed east and watched V-City shrink in a rearview mirror until it was a steel hill, a speck, and then nothing. Chapter 9.
"Tell me something," said Kate. The pain in her body had finally settled into something low and pervasive, but that was proving to be worse, because it made her want to fold in on herself, on the world, and that didn't work behind the wheel of the car. August sat silently beside her, looking out into the darkness as they passed from the yellow into the green, and finally from the green into the waste. If he noticed the shift, he didn't say anything. There wasn't a strict boundary, some bright billboard to announce that you were now leaving V-City. There didn't need to be. It was the transition from manicured lawns to wild grass, the change from streetlights and nice houses to nothing. UVR lines carved out the road, not from overhead but set into the pavement below, and made the night beyond look solid. They were on the Eastern Transit, one of four supply roads that led from the capital all the way to the Verity border. Kate tried to imagine what they looked like from the sky. Ribbons of light running like compass spokes away from V-City. From that angle, the waste would register as a massive black ring, a 200-mile buffer between the capital and the sub-cities that hug the periphery. Each little more than a speck of light compared to V-City's beacon. Apparently the transit roads used to be packed, back in the days before the phenomenon, when travel in and out of the territory wasn't restricted. And then, after, when people tried to evacuate the city, only to be pushed back by those who already lived outside it. These days, the waste roads were largely bare, save for the semis carrying shipments between sub-cities and the capital. It was a dangerous job. The waste looked empty, but it wasn't. Not many Maokai came this way, but the Korsai loved to hunt in the dark and pick off anything they could, from a cow to a family of five. The monsters that ventured this far out serve no master. And the people who braved the waste were just as lethal. Survivalists, mostly. Scavengers who raided homes and stole from semis. These were the people who didn't have the money to buy Harker's protection. The ones who didn't want to fight for Flynn and his task force, or die on his moral high ground. They didn't want anything to do with V-City. They just wanted to stay alive. But the dead zone didn't go on forever. She'd spent most of her life on the other side of the waste, and she knew that out ahead there was a place where razor wire gave way to open fields, and the high beams trailed into starry nights, and a girl could grow up in a house with her mother afraid of nothing, not even the dark.
"Tell me something," she said again. August had been sitting there, his eyes fixed on the night, his fingers tapping out some kind of short staccato rhythm against his leg. Now he glanced toward her. His face looked strangely hollow, his eyes feverish.
"Like what?"
"I don't know," she said. "A story?" August frowned.
"I don't like stories."
Kate frowned too.
"That's weird. Is it?"
asked August. Kate drummed her nails on the wheel. The paint was chipping.
"Yeah, I mean, most people want to escape. Get out of their heads, out of their lives. Stories are the easiest way to do that."
August's gaze escaped to the window.
"I suppose," he said.
It was maddening how little he talked, how much she wanted to. She switched on the radio, but the signal was already full of static, so she snapped it back off. The quiet gnawed at her already fraying edges.
"Say something," she whispered.
"Please." August's jaw clenched. His fingers tightened on his pants. But he cleared his throat and said,
"I don't get why people are always trying to escape."
"Really?" said Kate. take a look around. In the distance beyond August's window, the nothing gave way to something. A town, if it could be called a town. It was more like a huddle of ramshackle structures. Buildings gathered like fighters with their backs together, looking out on the night. The whole thing had a starved dog look about it. Fluorescent lights cut glaring beams through the darkness.
"I guess it's different for me," he said, his voice taut. "One moment I didn't exist, and the next I did. And I spend every day scared I'll just stop being again. And every time I slip, every time I go dark, it's harder to come back. It's all I can do to stay where I am, who I am."
"Wow, August," she said softly. "Way to kill the mood." That won her a small, exhausted laugh. But by the time it left his lips, it was already fading. He turned his face away, and Kate flexed her fingers on the wheel and kept her eyes ahead. Pain sparked across her stomach every time she breathed. Beside her, August was quiet, coiled, eyes on the night. "What happened to her?" she asked, trying to distract them both.
"Who?"
"Ilsa," she said. "She doesn't seem all there." August rubbed his fingertips over the tallies above his wrist.
"She's never been all there," he said. "For the longest time, I thought that was just her way. Scattered. I didn't get it until recently."
"Get what?"
"It's who she is," he said. "It's what she is. Cause and effect."
"You mean it has to do with the catalyst?" August nodded.
"Tsunai are the result of tragedies," he said. "Acts of horror so dark they upset the cosmic balance. Leo came from some kind of cult slaughter in the first weeks of the catalyst. This whole group thought the world was ending, so they threw themselves off a roof. Only they didn't go alone. They dragged their families with them. Parents, children." Kate let out a shallow breath.
"Christ."
"No wonder my brother is so righteous," he said softly. "Ilsa was different," he continued. "Emily, Henry's wife, she told me the story. Ilsa came from a bombing in the basement of a big hotel in North City."
The Allsway building, thought Kate. Harker Hall. You could still see the scorch marks on the walls.
"It was right after the chaos started," he said. "Not even weeks. Days. Days of confusion and terror. They didn't even know yet what was going on, but something got inside that place, and the people who managed to get away all went to the basement. They huddled down, just trying to stay alive. Barricaded the doors. But someone decided that if they were going out, it wasn't going to be at a monster's hand. That someone brought a homemade bomb into that basement with them and lit the fuse."
August shook his head.
"No wonder my sister broke apart."
"And you?" asked Kate. "Your brother is righteous. Your sister is scattered. What does that make you?" When August answered, the word was small, almost too quiet to hear.
"Lost."
He exhaled, and it seemed to take more than air out of him.
"I am what happens when a kid is so afraid of the world he lives in that he escapes the only way he knows how. Violently."
Silence. So heavy it hurt. August leaned his head against the window, and the glass began to fog with steam. A bead of sweat ran down his cheek, and Kate reached to turn on the air when the car made a sound. It wasn't the kind of sound a car should make. August straightened. The engine stuttered.
"What was that?"
he asked. The car began to rapidly lose speed.
"Oh, no,"
she said. And then it died. Chapter 10 A light on the dash was blinking. The high beams were still on. The rest of the car was dead.
Shit,
muttered Kate.
Kate, ground August through his teeth.
What's wrong with the car?
It's out of gas, she said, already swinging open the door. She was digging in the trunk by the time he got out and joined her.
The night was cool, but it wasn't enough to dampen the fever.
You couldn't have picked one with a full tank?
I'm sorry, I was a little busy trying not to die.
Something like a groan escaped his throat.
It's fine, she said, producing an HUV flashlight.
How is this fine?
He growled, anger burning through his chest, flaring with every breath.
We'll find a ride, said Kate, keeping her voice even, as if the calm would help.
August wheeled on her.
Do you see a ride? What the hell's gotten into you? She shot back.
August opened his mouth to say,
Nothing!
But he couldn't, and the urge to shout was fighting with the urge to hit something. So he turned and walked away, trying with every step to steady his breathing, calm his heart, knowing that panic would only spread the sickness faster. His feet carried him down the line of light at the edge of the road. He wasn't going anywhere, really, just moving.
Mind over body.
He knotted his fingers in his hair and stared out into the dark. They were in the middle of nowhere. The light from V-City was nothing but a ghost against the distant clouds, and the night around them black as pitch. They'd passed some kind of fortress a few miles back. It hadn't looked welcoming. In the distance somewhere, gunfire echoed like far-off thunder, and he didn't know if it was real or just the phantoms in his head. Hunger plucked at his muscles and sang through his bones, and it felt like something was trying to claw its way out. He should have eaten the man back in the garage. Would have if he'd had the chance. But to his dismay, the human hadn't been a killer. Of all Harker's men, what were the odds of Sloane sending an innocent? Did the Maokai know Sunai could only feed on sinners? Or was it just bad luck? After several deep breaths, August had the anger under control. He turned back to the car and saw Kate leaning against the driver's side door, arms crossed carefully over her ribs, clearly fighting back the cold. August couldn't feel it, not through the fever.
Here, said August, setting the violin case on the ground and shrugging off his jacket.
Keep it, she said, but he was already settling it around her shoulders. He could see her relax beneath the added warmth. His hand lingered a moment on her good shoulder. Something about the contact, simple, solid, made him feel steadier. He started to pull away, but Kate caught his fingers. Her eyes were dark, and the way her lips were parted, he could tell she wanted to say something. But when she spoke, all she said was, "Your hand is hot." August swallowed and pulled free as gently as possible as something flickered across the sky above Kate's head. He looked up, and the air caught in his throat. It was a clear night, and the sky was filled with dots of light. Kate followed his gaze.
What?
She drawled. You've never seen stars before?
No, he said softly. Not like this.
The sky was on fire. He wondered if Ilsa had ever seen stars. Not the black icons across her skin, but the real things, which were so strange and perfect. One streaked across the sky, trailing light.
I read somewhere, said Kate, that people are made of stardust.
He dragged his eyes from the sky.
Really?
Maybe that's what you're made of, just like us. And despite everything, August smiled. It was such a hard-won smile, but it was worth it. And then, all of a sudden, it was gone, and August shuddered, bracing himself against the car. Something like a chill went through him, a tremor that seemed to run from his limbs to his core. Her hands hovered in the air around him, helpless. What's wrong?
I'll be okay, he said.
Bullshit! In response, he tugged aside his collar and she saw the edge of light. Not bright, but burning against his chest like the lit end of a cigarette. It drew a single line, the ember red darkening to black. A new tally. A new day. How many is that? He was still shaking, but when he looked up, there was something in his eyes. A kind of grim triumph.
423.
Just then, truck lights cut through the darkness, coming from the direction of V-City. Kate waved the HUV, and to her relief, the truck slowed and hauled itself onto the shoulder. It was a semi, obviously reinforced for the trek through the waste. Its grille and flanks framed by grates with iron striping, its windows coated to make them bulletproof. There were several scores along its sides, and they probably weren't from Corsi. The monsters targeted humans. The humans targeted supplies. Kate tucked the ornate silver pendant under her shirt and stepped up onto the truck's footboard as the passenger window inched down.
"What the hell are you kids doing out here?" asked the driver.
He was middle-aged and had the cropped, weathered look of someone who'd spent too much of his life on edge. "Car trouble," she said, flashing her best smile. "Can you give us a lift?" He looked past her to August, and Kate tried to see him as the driver would. Just a lanky teen boy with an instrument case slung over his shoulder.
"Where are you going?"
Kate nodded at the road heading away from V-City. She dug up the name of the easternmost sub-city. "Louisville." He shook his head.
"That's on the other side of the waste," he said. "You're better off trying to catch a lift back toward the capital."
"We saw a town or something a little ways back," she said, filling her voice with naivete. "You think we should head there?" The man grimaced.
"You try to get inside a fort at night, the only thing you're gonna get is shot."
He ran a hand through his short hair.
"Damn it."
He wasn't wearing a medallion. Kate swallowed, then tugged her pendant over her head. The weight of the silver was solid, reassuring. She didn't want to get rid of it, but she couldn't stay here on the side of the road either. She held it up for the driver to see.
"Look, we don't want to cause trouble. We haven't got much cash, but if you can at least give us a lift in the right direction, I'll give you this."
The driver's eyes went wide, and Kate knew she had him. After all, a Harker medallion was safety, and safety was a luxury, a commodity more valuable and more expensive than a truck, a house, a life. The man's fingers closed around the silver.
"Get in."
Kate climbed into the front seat, and August slid onto a bench that looked like it also functioned as a cot. He knitted his fingers and bowed his head. Kate wasn't an idiot. Something was obviously wrong. But every time she asked, he just got mad, as if she was making it worse. He looked ill. Did monsters get ill? Or did they only get hungry? How long had it been since he'd eaten?
"Look," said the driver, "I'm not in the smuggling business, okay? I'm a trucker. I only go as far as the sub-cities, so if you're looking for a way through the border, I can't help you."
"It's fine," said Kate. "We're not trying to cross."
"Then what the hell are you doing out here in the dark?"
And it was weird, but Kate almost told him the truth. It seemed to bubble up, out of her mind and out her mouth, the words rising so fast she had to bite her tongue to stop them. What had August said about Sunai and truth? She shot him a look, but he was sitting hunched forward, elbows on knees, staring at the ground. "It was a dare," she said. "We were with some friends."
"There was a concert tonight," added August from the back seat. "At the edge of the green."
"Yeah," chimed in Kate. "Our friends bet us $20 we wouldn't drive into the waste when it was over. 40 if we brought something back from the subsidy on the other side." "Stupid me," she added. "I didn't check the tank." The driver shook his head.
Kids these days, he said, guiding the semi back onto the road. You got too much time and too little sense.
His sleeves were rolled up, and his right forearm bore several nasty scars. Corsi marks.
I'll take you as far as the next truck stop. It's about as safe as it gets out here. After that, you find your own way back into the green.
Kate nodded. Works for us, she said, casting a glance back at August. But she couldn't see his face. It was lost in shadow. Chapter 11. August felt the semi slow and dragged his head up off the back seat. The truck was pulling off the UVR strip and onto a second, smaller road. For an instant, the road light faded. Then it redoubled as a building came into sight. It was more a fortress than a truck stop. High metal fences topped with razor wire circled the structure. And massive UVRs cut a swath through the darkness. A mote of light that stretched across the tarmac, erasing every shadow. A sign over the building, which really looked like several buildings stacked together, announced that this place was the Horizon. The driver stopped in front of the fence and honked once, then waited. Two men stood on either side, weapons in hand. One held an HUV and some kind of machete, the other a machine gun. One weapon for the monsters, August realized, and one for the raiders. The gates hissed open and the semi rumbled forward into the lot. August heard the metallic grind of gates closing again, and his chest tightened at the thought of being penned in.
This is as far as we go, said the driver as he parked. Plenty guys here will give you a ride back. You got any cash?
A little, said Kate, even though August was pretty sure they were down to spare change. The man chewed his lip, then held out the medallion she'd given him.
Give him this, then.
Kate hesitated. We had a deal.
I was going this way, said the driver. Go on. Take it.
Kate took the pendant and tucked it into her pocket with a quiet thanks. Outside, the night had gotten crisper, the cool air washing over August like a salve. Around them, a dozen trucks were parked in even rows, like black tallies, shadowless against the pavement. His eyes floated closed, his mind sliding into 423 lines, into echoes ghosted on barren ground, into gunshots and screams and blazing hunger. And then he was being pulled, and he opened his eyes to see Kate dragging him toward the fluorescent haze of the rest stop. Come on, she said. I'm starving. And he tried to laugh, but the sound stuck in his throat like glass. The Horizon was apparently the place to be at 4 a.m. It was like its own small self-contained city, with a cafeteria and bathrooms with showers and supply stores. The whole space so well lit that it hurt Kate's eyes. August had gone to the bathroom, mumbling something about freshening up, and Kate wandered the aisles, trying to pretend she had more than $5 in her wallet as she perused the shelves. Credit cards she had in abundance, but cards were traceable, and she'd used most of her cash to pay for the motel. She was thinking about palming a granola bar when she saw the watch. It was hanging on a low display with a few maps and other travel supplies. An ordinary digital watch, except for the fact it showed not only time and temperature, but coordinates. She didn't have an address for where she was going, but she had the numbers, latitude and longitude. 38 degrees, 29.45, negative 86 degrees, 32.56. Kate pulled the watch from the display as casually as possible, examining it for several long moments before slipping it into the pocket of her coat. Only it wasn't her coat, but August's. And when she shoved the watch into the pocket, her fingers came up against something metal and smooth. The stolen cell phone. Her eyes flicked up, but there was no sign of August, and the rest of the patrons were busy pouring too much sugar in their coffee, or looking glassy-eyed at the row of television screens mounted along the wall. Kate drew the cell phone from her pocket. It was off, to save power, and she held the button down until it booted, hoping for a message. Nothing. She looked around. Maybe they didn't need to keep going. Maybe they could stay here, in the horizon. It was warded six ways against monsters. No Maokai would ever get in, and the place was big enough to keep them from looking too conspicuous. Maybe? And then she heard her name. Not coming from August or anyone in the store, but from the television on the wall. She looked up and saw a picture filling the screen. A picture of her. August clutched the sink, his vision sliding in and out of focus. It was getting worse. He stared at the mirror, and his reflection stared back, eyes wide and cheeks hollow. His bones were on fire. When he looked down at his hands, he thought he could see them through the skin. Not dark like a Maokai's, but glowing white, alive with heat. The fever was burning out the anger, leaving something else in its wake. He fumbled with the tap and ran his hands under the cold water. Tendrils of steam rose from where the moisture met his skin. They were so far from the city, and the absence of people, of monsters, of energy, was making him woozy.
"Pack a snack,"
Leo had said. August groaned inwardly. Mind over body. Mind over body. Mind over body, over bodies on the floor, over tallies seared day by day by day into skin until it cracked and broke and bled into the beat of gunfire and the melody of pain, and the world was made of savage music. Made and was made of, and that was the cycle. The big bang into the whimper, and on, and none of it was real except for August, or all of it was real except for him. He surfaced with a gasp. It was getting harder and harder to stay afloat, and clenched his hands into fists on the rim of the sink. He could feel his nails denting his palms, threatening to break the skin. August had done this before, had starved himself, determined to believe that he was stronger than this, disgusted by the fact he wasn't, by the way the hunger ravaged him when it barely seemed to touch his siblings, desperate to find something on the other side, something besides darkness. August had gone to the edge of his senses and over, had memorized the steps, the stages, as if knowing them was half the battle to overcoming, to outwitting, outwilling the need. First came anger, then madness, then joy, then sorrow. They should make a nursery rhyme about that. Anger, madness, joy, sorrow. Anger, madness, joy, sorrow. Anger. He was sliding again. "You're okay. You're okay. You're okay."
"You okay, kid?"
He looked up and saw a man standing there, the left half of his face creased with scars. August swallowed, found his voice.
"Tired of fighting," he said.
The man shook his head, the gesture sympathetic as he washed his hands.
"Aren't we all?"
The headline on the screen read, "Catherine Harker abducted. Flynn family suspected."
"Henry Flynn is denying any responsibility in the abduction," the news anchor was saying. "But sources close to the case confirm that a member of the Flynn family was attending school with Catherine Harker and was seen with her immediately preceding her disappearance. What's more," the news anchor's eyes went bright with morbid glee, "evidence suggests that Asunai was responsible for the attack at the Esteem School, which left three students and a teacher dead, and Harker's only child missing." Kate's stomach lurched. Several men were standing around, looking up at the screens. One muttered something vile underneath his breath. Another said there better be a reward.
"Turn this trash off,"
grumbled the third.
"Can't,"
said the old woman working the till.
"It's on every channel."
The screen then cut to footage of her father, who was standing before a podium in a crisp black suit, as if he didn't know what was happening, as if his own rogue monsters weren't to blame.
I will have my daughter back,
he said.
And I will see the perpetrators, whoever they are, punished for their crimes against my family and against this capital. We in North City see this for what it is, an act of war.
The news anchor was back.
If you have any information about Catherine Harker, contact the number below.
Kate was already coding a message into the stolen cell. Call. Urgent. She backed away from the line of televisions, ducking behind a display of some nondescript, non-perishable food. 1 minute passed. Two. And then it rang.
Catherine,
came her father's voice, only a ghost of his former panic in his voice. He'd regained his usual composure.
Are you all right?
Why would you say that on TV? She snapped. I told you it wasn't them. A measured exhale.
I don't know that. Not for sure.
I do, she whispered angrily.
So he is with you?
The question threw her. What?
Frederick Gallagher, also known as August Flynn, Henry's third Sunai.
Her chest tightened. She would have told him, was planning to tell him. Hell, she was planning to deliver the monster to her father's feet. Now she couldn't bring herself to say his name.
Has he been with you the entire time?
Pressed Harker. But Kate didn't give. This wasn't August's fault. August hadn't tried to kill her. August had saved her life.
Catherine?
Where is Sloan?
Hunting down those who moved against me.
He's the one moving against you, she snarled.
No,
he said evenly.
He's not. I questioned him myself. Sloan says he had no hand in the attack.
That's a lie!
We both know he cannot lie.
Her thoughts spun. It had to be Sloan. Who else would have done this?
Dad, stay out of the city until you hear from me.
So you can let people think I've been abducted?
So I can keep you safe.
His tone was hardening.
And you need not code the messages, Catherine. This is my phone, after all. Who else would see it?
Your shadow, she wanted to say. Instead, she hung up.
You're letting out the cold,
snapped a rasping voice. August drew his head out of the beverage case to see a wiry old woman in a Horizon uniform.
Sorry,
he said, shutting the fridge doors.
I meant to let it in.
The words sounded wrong on his tongue, but they were already out. Nearby, a woman's voice started rising as she talked into a cell. A man dropped his cup of coffee, spilling it on another trucker. The second swore and shoved the first back, a little too hard. Tension rose like pressure in the store around him. The woman hurried away, and then, between one burning heartbeat and the next, August caught the scent of crime. Old blood, a chill in the air that rustled against his fevered skin. August swayed, his fingers tightening on the strap of the violin case as his gaze slid across the store, over shelves and faces, until... there. The whole world came into focus around the man. He was stocky, with a mud-splattered coat, a short, uneven beard, and a head too small for his shoulders. But August didn't care about any of that. All he cared about was the shadow coiling like a cape behind the man, restless and wrong, and the fact he was already out the front door, taking the promise of cold bones and clear thoughts with him. August moved to follow, but someone gripped his arm. Kate. We have to go, she snapped. Now.
Kate,
He couldn't drag his eyes from the man's shrinking form.
I need to...
But before he could finish, she took his jaw in her hand. He was amazed it didn't burn her fingers, and turned it toward a bank of televisions mounted on the wall. Her face was plastered on the screens. All the screens. Above the headline, Catherine Harker abducted. Flynn family suspected. He felt himself surface,
a painfully sharp moment of clarity as he took in the headline.
No,
he said, the word knocked out of him like a breath.
I didn't.
Just then the front doors chimed open, and the driver, the one who'd given them a lift, came in and saw the screens and stopped.
What's this?
Shit. Kate pulled August down below the rim of the shelves.
Go, now!
She shoved him in the direction of a hall. He cast a last desperate glance toward the front doors, but the man with the sin-made shadow was already gone.
Come on,
said Kate, pushing him past the bathrooms and through the back exit. Out onto the other side of the truck stop's tarmac. The UVRs rained down on them, and August winced, head pounding.
I didn't abduct you,
he said.
I saved your life. You're the one who decided to run.
And you're the one who decided to come with me. Kate was already walking away. Away from the truck stop. Away from him. She disappeared around the nearest corner, and he forced himself to follow.
We have to tell someone, he said, jogging to catch up. We have to let them know you're okay. In case you forgot, she called back. Someone is still trying to kill me. They don't even have to.
August knew he had a point. He was fighting to hold on to it.
This is exactly what they wanted, Kate, to blame my family for breaking the truce. And it's gonna work if we don't...
Kate spun on him.
What do you want me to do, August? I can't just go back.
A set of doors burst open behind them.
Hey, you,
called a voice. August and Kate both turned. It was one of the truckers from inside the store, a hard-looking man with a pistol hanging loosely from his fingers, a second unarmed man trailing in his wake. August started to shift in front of Kate when another pair of doors flew open behind her and two more figures spilled out into the pool of light. The man had a bat, the woman a knife, edge glinting in the glaring light. Beneath the UVRs, they cast no shadows. Four more people, and none of them were sinners. The ground tipped dangerously beneath August's feet. He started to slide the violin case from his shoulders, hoping he could at least disarm them, when the first man moved, swinging up his gun and firing. The bullet ricocheted off the tarmac inches from August's feet. The sound was deafening, and for a moment he was back in a school cafeteria staring down at the small black tallies on the floor before Kate's voice brought him back.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
She snapped at the man.
Is it true?
Said the trucker, his gun leveled on August's chest, but his gaze on Kate.
You're Harker's kid? Does that make you the monster?
Cut in the man behind him. Before August could answer, the man with the back caught Kate's wrist and dragged her toward him. She kneed him, and he went gasping backward. But the woman with the knife grabbed Kate and forced her back, shoving the blade beneath her chin. August started forward, and the gun went off again, this time nearly grazing his cheek. The woman with the knife smiled, her teeth half metal.
Finders keepers, boys. Reward's mine.
Only reward you're gonna get is a bullet.
August almost wished the man would follow through. He was having trouble staying on his feet, his focus swinging from the bat to the knife to the gun, while the tension rose around them all like heat.
Tell you what, said the man with the bat. We'll take the girl, you can take the boy. I think we'll take them both, said the one with the gun.
Kate hissed as the knife pressed against her throat.
How do you plan to do that?
Asked the woman. The air was humming now. The woman with the knife and the man with the gun locked in a kind of standoff. The man with the bat and the one with nothing but fists inching closer. Their eyes were shining strangely, the way people's did when they spoke to August. Greed and violence all starting to surface, as if they were feeding on his hunger. August's head spun. He knew he couldn't quiet the chaos as long as it was rising in him. But maybe he didn't have to. Leo knew how to twist these feelings in people, how to sharpen and focus them. Mind over body. Instead of fighting the influence, trying to rein it in, he turned the volume up, let it roll across the tarmac and over the men. Kate must have also felt the shift in the air, in the attackers, in herself, because her eyes met his. Her fingers twitched, and an instant later he caught sight of metal in her palm.